continuing on page 1048. It was perhaps 15 feet high and as black as a moonless night. Each of its legs was as thick as a muscle builder's thigh. Its eyes were bright, malevolent rubies, bulging from sockets filled with some dripping chromium-colored fluid. Its jagged mandibles opened and closed, dripping ribbons of foam. Frozen in an ecstasy of horror, tottering on the brink of utter lunacy, Ben observed with an eye of the storm calm that this foam was alive. It struck the stinking stone-flagged floor and then began to writhe away into the cracks like protozoa. But it's something else. There's some final shape, one that I can almost see, the way you might see the shape of a man moving behind a movie screen while the show is on. Some other shape. But I don't want to see it. Please, God, don't let me see it. And it didn't matter, did it? They were seeing what they were seeing, and Ben understood somehow that it was imprisoned in this final shape, the shape of the spider, by their common, unsought, and unfathered vision. It was against this it that they would live or die. The creature was squealing and mewling, and Ben became quite sure he was hearing sounds it made twice, in his head, and then, a split second later, in his ears. Telepathic, he thought. I'm reading its mind. Its shadow was a squat egg that raced along the ancient wall of this keep that was its lair. Its body was covered by coarse hair, and Ben saw that it was possessed of a stinger long enough to impale a man. A clear fluid dripped from its tip, and Ben saw that this was also alive. Like the saliva, the poison writhed away into the cracks of the floor. Its stinger, yes. But below that, its belly bulged grotesquely, almost dragging on the floor as it moved. Now changing direction slightly, heading unerringly toward their leader, toward Big Bill. That's its egg sac, Ben thought, and his mind seemed to shriek at the implication. Whatever it is beyond what we see, this representation is at least symbolically correct. It's female, and it's pregnant. It was pregnant then, and none of us knew except Stan. Oh, Jesus Christ, yes, it was Stan. Stan, not Mike, Stan who understood, Stan who told us. That's why we had to come back, no matter what, because it is female. It's pregnant with some unimaginable spawn, and its time has drawn close. Incredibly, Bill Dendro was stepping forward to meet it. Bill, no, Beverly screamed. Stay back, Bill shouted without looking around. And then Richie was running toward him, shouting his name, and Ben found his own legs in motion. He seemed to feel a phantom stomach swaying in front of him, and he welcomed the sensation. Got to become a child again, he thought incoherently. That's the only way I can keep it from driving me crazy. Got to become a kid again. Got to accept it, somehow. Running, shouting Bill's name, vaguely aware that Eddie was running beside him, his broken arm flopping, the belt of the bathrobe Bill had cinched around it now trailing on the floor. Eddie had drawn his aspirator. He looked like a crazed, malnourished gunslinger with some weird pistol. Ben heard Bill bellow, You could have killed my brother, you fucking bitch. Then it was rearing up over Bill, burying Bill in its shadow, its legs pawing the air. Ben heard its eager mewling, looked into its timeless evil red eyes, and for an instant did see the shape behind the shape. Saw lights, saw an endless crawling hairy thing which was made of light and nothing else. Orange light, dead light that mocked life. The ritual began for the second time. Chapter 22. The Ritual of Chud. 1. In the Lair of It, 1958. It was Bill who held them together as that great black spider raced down its web, creating a noxious breeze that tousled their hair. Stan shrieked like a baby, his brown eyes bulging from their sockets, his fingers harrowing his cheeks. Ben backed slowly away until his ample ass struck the wall to the left of the door. He felt cold fire burn through his pants and stepped away again, but dreamily. Surely none of this could be happening. It was simply the world's worst nightmare. He found he could not lift his hands. They seemed to have big weights tied to them. Richie found his eyes drawn to that web. hanging here and there, partially wrapped in silken strands that seemed to move as if alive, were a number of rotted, half-eaten bodies. He thought he recognized Eddie Corcoran near the ceiling, although both of Eddie's legs and one of his arms were gone. Beverly and Mike clung to each other like Hansel and Gretel in the woods, watching, paralyzed, as the spider reached the floor and scrabbled toward them, its distorted shadow racing along beside it on the wall. Bill looked around at them, a tall, skinny boy in a mud and sewage-splattered T-shirt that had once been white, jeans with cuffs, mud-caked keds. His hair lay across his forehead, and his eyes were blazing. He surveyed them, seemed to dismiss them, and turned back toward the spider. And, incredibly, he began to cross the room toward it. Not running, but walking fast, his elbows cocked, his forearms corded, his hands fisted.
You could kill my brother.
No, Bill, Beverly shrieked, struggling free of Mike's embrace and running toward Bill, her red hair flying out behind her. Leave him alone, she screamed at the spider. Don't you touch him. Shit, Beverly, Ben thought. And then he was running too, stomach swaying back and forth in front of him, legs pumping. He was vaguely aware that Eddie Kasprak was running on his left, holding his aspirator in his good hand like a pistol. And then it was rearing up over Bill, who was unarmed. It buried Bill in its shadow, its legs pawing at the air. Ben grabbed for Beverly's shoulder. His hand slapped it, then slipped off. She turned toward him, her eyes wild, her lips drawn back from her teeth.
Help him, she screamed.
How? Ben screamed back. He wheeled toward the spider, heard its eager mewling, looked into its timeless evil eyes, and saw something behind the shape. Something much worse than a spider. Something that was all insane light. His courage faltered, but it was Bev who had asked him, Bev, and he loved her.
God damn you, leave Bill alone, he shrieked.
A moment later, a hand swatted his back so hard he almost fell over. It was Richie, and although tears were running down his cheeks, Richie was grinning madly. The corners of his mouth seemed to reach almost to the lobes of his ears. Spit leaked out between his teeth.
Let's get her, Haystack, Richie screamed. Chud, chud.
Her? Ben thought stupidly. Her? Did he say? Aloud.
Okay, but what is it? What's chud?
Frocked if I know. Richie yelled, then ran toward Bill and into the shadow of it. It had somehow squatted on its rear legs. Its front legs pawed the air just over Bill's head. And Stan Uris, forced to approach, compelled to approach in spite of every instinct in his mind and body, saw that Bill was staring up at it, his blue eyes fixed on its inhuman orange ones, eyes from which that awful corpse light spilled. Stan stopped, understanding that the ritual of Chud, whatever that was, had begun. 2. Bill in the Void. Early.
Who are you, and why do you come to me?
I'm Bill Denbro. You know who I am and why I'm here. You killed my brother, and I'm here to kill you. You picked the wrong kid, bitch.
I am eternal. I am the eater of worlds.
Yeah, that's so? Well, you've had your last meal, sister.
You have no power. Here is the power. Feel the power, brat, and then speak again of how you come to kill the eternal. You think you see me? You see only what your mind will allow. Would you see me? Come then. Come, brat. Come.
Throne. He.
No, not throne. Fired. Fired like a living bullet, like the human cannonball at the Shrine Circus that came to Derry each May. He was picked up and heaved across the spider's chamber.
It's only in my mind, he screamed at himself. My body's still standing right there, eye to eye with it. Be brave. It's only a mind trick. Be brave. Be true. Stand. Stand.
Thrusts. Roaring forward, slamming into a black and dripping tunnel lined with decaying, crumbling tiles that were 50 years old, 100, 1,000, 1,000,000,000, who knew? Rushing in deadly silence past intersections, some lit by that twisting green-yellow fire, some by glowing balloons full of a ghastly white skull light, others dead black. He was thrown at a speed of 1,000 miles an hour past piles of bones, some human, some not, speeding like a rocket-powered dart in a wind tunnel, now angling upward, but not toward light,
but toward dark. Some titanic dark. His fists. And exploding outward into utter blackness. The blackness was everything. The blackness was the cosmos and the universe. And the floor of the blackness was hard, hard. It was like polished ebonite. And he was skidding along on his chest and belly and thighs like a weight on a shuffleboard. He was on the ballroom floor of eternity, and eternity was black. Against the posts.
Stop that. Why do you say that? That won't help you, stupid boy.
And still insists he sees the ghosts.
Stop it.
He thrusts his fists against the posts and still insists he sees the ghosts.
Stop it. Stop it. I demand, I command that you stop it.
Don't like that, do you? And thinking, if I could only say it out loud, say it without stuttering, I could break this illusion.
This is no illusion, you foolish little boy. This is eternity. My eternity, and you are lost in it, lost forever, never to find your way back. You are eternal now, and condemned to wander in the black. After you meet me, face to face, that is.
But there was something else here. Bill sensed it, felt it, in a crazy way, smelled it. Some large presence ahead in the dark. A shape. He felt not fear, but a sense of overmastering awe. Here was a power which dwarfed its power. And Bill had only time to think incoherently, please, please, whatever you are, remember that I am very small. He rushed toward it and saw it was a great turtle. Its shell plated with many blazing colors. Its ancient reptilian head slowly poked out of its shell, and Bill thought he felt a vague, contemptuous surprise from the thing that had cast him out here. The eyes of the turtle were kind. Bill thought it must be the oldest thing anyone could imagine, older by far than it, which had claimed to be eternal. What are you?
I'm the turtle, son. I made the universe. But please don't blame me for it. I had a bellyache.
Help me. Please help me.
I take no stand in these matters.
My brother
has his own place in the macroverse. Energy is eternal, as even a child such as yourself must understand.
He was flying past the turtle now, and even at his tremendous skidding speed, the turtle's plated side seemed to go on and on to his right. He thought dimly of riding in a train and passing one going in the other direction, a train that was so long it seemed eventually to stand still or even move backward. He could still hear it, yammering and buzzing, its voice high and angry, not human, full of mad hate. But when the turtle spoke, its voice was blanked out utterly. The turtle spoke in Bill's head, and Bill understood somehow that there was yet another. And that final other dwelt in a void beyond this one. The final other was, perhaps, the creator of the turtle, which only watched, and it, which only ate. This other was a force beyond the universe, a power beyond all other power, the author of all there was. Suddenly he thought he understood. It meant to thrust him through some wall at the end of the universe and into some other place. What that old turtle called the macroverse, where it really lived, where it existed as a titanic glowing core which might be no more than the smallest mote in that other's mind. He would see it naked, a thing of unshaped, destroying light. And there he would either be mercifully annihilated or live forever, insane and yet conscious inside its homicidal, endless, formless, hungry being. Please help me, for the others.
You must help yourself, son.
But how? Please tell me, how?
He had reached the turtle's heavily scaled back legs now. There was time enough to observe its titanic yet ancient flesh, time to be struck with the wonder of its heavy toenails. They were an odd bluish-yellow color, and he could see galaxies swimming in each one.
Please, you are good. I sense and believe that you are good, and I am begging you. Won't you please help me?
You already know. There is only Chud and your friends.
Please, oh please!
Son, you've got to thrust your fists against the posts and still insist you see the ghosts. That's all I can tell you.
Once you get into cosmological shit like this, you got to throw away the instruction manual.
He realized the voice of the turtle was fading. He was beyond it now, bulleting into a darkness that was deeper than deep. The turtle's voice was being overcome, overmastered by the gleeful, gibbering voice of the thing that had thrust him out and into this black void. The voice of the spider, of it.
How do you like it out here, little friend? Do you like it? Do you love it? Do you give it 98 points because it has a good beat and you can dance to it? Can you catch it on your tonsils and heave it left and right? Did you enjoy meeting my friend, the turtle? I thought that stupid old fuck died years ago, and for all the good he could do you, he might as well have. Did you think he could help you?
No, 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 no. He thrusts. No, he rusts. No.
Stop babbling. The time is short. Let us talk while we still can. Tell me about yourself, little friend. Tell me, do you love all the cold dark out here? Are you enjoying your grand tour of the nothingness that lies outside? Wait until you break through, little friend. Wait until you break through to where I am. Wait for that. Wait for the deadlights. You'll look, and you'll go mad. But you'll live, and live, and live. Inside them. Inside me.
It screamed noxious laughter, and Bill became aware that its voice was beginning both to fade and to swell, as if he was simultaneously drawing out of its range and hurtling into it. And wasn't that just what was happening?
Yes, he thought it was, because while the voices were in perfect sync, the one he was now rushing toward was totally alien, speaking syllables no human tongue or throat could reproduce.
That's the voice of the deadlights, he thought. The time is short. Let us talk while we still can.
Its human voice fading the way the Bangor radio stations faded when you were in the car and traveling south. Bright, flaring terror filled him. He would shortly be beyond sane communication with it. And some part of him understood that. For all its laughter, for all its alien glee, that was what it wanted. Not just to send him out to whatever it really was, but to break their mental communication. If that ceased, he would be utterly destroyed. To pass beyond communication was to pass beyond salvation. He understood that much from the way his parents had behaved toward him after George had died. It was the only lesson their refrigerator coldness had had to teach him. Leaving it and approaching it. But the leaving was somehow more important. If it wanted to eat little kids out here, or suck them in, or whatever it did, why hadn't it sent them all out here? Why just him? Because it had to rid its spider self of him. That was why. Somehow the spider it and the it which it called the deadlights were linked. Whatever lived out here in the black might be invulnerable when it was here and nowhere else. But it was also on Earth, under Derry, in a form that was physical. However repulsive it might be, in Derry it was physical. And what was physical could be killed. Bill skidded through the dark, his speed still increasing. Why do I sense so much of its talk is nothing but a bluff, a big shuck and jive? Why should that be? How can that be? He understood how, maybe, just maybe. There is only Chud, the turtle had said. And suppose this was it. Suppose they had bitten deep into each other's tongues, not physically, but mentally, spiritually. And suppose that if it could throw Bill far enough into the void, far enough toward its eternal discorporate self, the ritual would be over. It would have ripped him free, killed him, and won everything all at the same time.
You're doing good, son, but very shortly it's going to be too late.
It's scared. Scared of me. Scared of all of us.
Skidding. He was skidding, and there was a wall up ahead. He sensed it in the dark, the wall at the edge of the continuum. And beyond it, the other shape, the deadlights.
Don't talk to me, son, and don't talk to yourself. It's tearing you loose. Bite in, if you care, if you dare, if you can be brave, if you can stand. Bite in, son.
Bill bit in, not with his teeth, but with teeth in his mind. Dropping his voice a full register, making it not his own, making it, in fact, his father's voice, although Bill would go to his grave not knowing this,
Some secrets are never known, and it's probably better so. Drawing in a great breath, he cried,
"He thrusts his fists against the posts and still insists he sees the ghosts. Now let me go."
He felt it scream in his mind, a scream of frustrated, petulant rage. But it was also a scream of fear and pain. It was not used to not having its own way. Such a thing had never happened to it. And until the most recent moments of its existence, it had not suspected such a thing could. Bill felt it writhing at him, not pulling, but pushing, trying to get him away.
"Thrusts his fists against the posts," I said.
"Stop it.
Bring me back. You must. I command it. I demand it."
It screamed again, its pain more intense now. Perhaps partly because, while it had spent its long, long existence inflicting pain, feeding on it, it had never experienced it as a part of itself. Still, it tried to push him, to get rid of him, blindly and stubbornly insisting on winning, as it had always won before. It pushed. But Bill sensed that his outward speed had slowed, and a grotesque image came into his mind. Its tongue, covered with that living spittle, extended like a thick rubber band, cracking, bleeding. He saw himself clinging to the tip of that tongue by his teeth, ripping through it a little at a time, his face bathed in the convulsive ichor that was its blood, drowning in its dead stench, yet still holding on somehow, while it struggled in its blind pain and towering rage not to let its tongue snap back.
"Chud, this Chud. Stand, be brave, be true, stand for your brother, your friends. Believe in all the things you have believed in. Believe that if you tell the policeman you're lost, he'll see that you get home safely. That there is a tooth fairy who lives in a huge enamel castle, and Santa Claus below the North Pole making toys with his trove of elves, and that Captain Midnight could be real. Yes, he could be, in spite of Calvin and Sissy Clark's big brother Carlton saying that was all a lot of baby stuff. Believe that your mother and father will love you again, that courage is possible and words will come smoothly every time. No more losers, no more cowering in a hole in the ground and calling it a clubhouse, no more crying in Georgie's room because you couldn't save him and didn't know. Believe in yourself. Believe in the heat of that desire." He suddenly began to laugh in the darkness, not in hysteria, but in utter delighted amazement. "Oh, shit! I believe in all of those things," he shouted. And it was true. Even at 11, he had observed that things turned out right a ridiculous amount of the time. Light flared around him. He raised his arms out and above his head. He turned his face up, and suddenly he felt power rush through him. He heard it scream again, and suddenly he was being drawn back the way he had come, still holding that image of his teeth planted deep in the strange meat of its tongue, his teeth locked together like grim old death. He flew through the dark, legs trailing behind him, the tips of his mud-crusted sneaker laces flying like pennants, the wind of this empty place blowing in his ears. He was pulled past the turtle and saw that its head had withdrawn into its shell. Its voice emerged hollow and distorted, as if even the shell it lived in were a well eternities deep.
"Not bad, son, but I'd finish it now. Don't let it get away. Energy has a way of dissipating, you know. What can be done when you're 11 can often never be done again." The voice of the turtle faded, faded, faded. There was only the rushing dark, and then the mouth of the cyclopean tunnel, smells of age and decay, cobwebs brushing at his face like rotted skeins of silk in a haunted house, moldering tiles blurring by, intersections all dark now, the moon balloons all gone, and it was screaming, screaming, "Let me go! Let me go, I'll leave, never come back, let me go, it hurts, it hurts, it hurts." "Thrusts his fists," Bill screamed, nearly delirious now. He could see light ahead, but it was fading, guttering like great candles which had at last burned low. And for a moment he saw himself and the others holding hands in a line, Eddie on one side of him and Richie on the other. He saw his own body, sagging, his head rolled back on his neck, staring up at the spider, which twisted and whirled like a dervish, its coarse spiny legs beating at the floor, poison dripping from its stinger. It was screaming in its death agony. So Bill honestly believed. Then he was slamming back into his body with all the impact of a line drive slamming into a baseball glove. The force of it tearing his hands loose from Richie's and Eddie's, driving him to his knees and skidding him across the floor to the edge of the web. He reached out for one of the strands without thinking, and his hand immediately went numb, as if it had been injected with a hypo full of Novocaine. The strand itself was as thick as a telephone pole guy wire. "Don't touch that, Bill," Ben yelled. And Bill yanked his hand away in one quick jerk, leaving a raw place across his palm just below the fingers. It filled with blood, and he staggered to his feet, eyes on the spider. It was scrabbling away from them, making its way into the growing dimness at the back of the chamber as the light failed. It left puddles and pools of black blood behind as it went. Somehow, their confrontation had ruptured its insides in a dozen, maybe 100 places. "Bill, the web!" Mike screamed. "Look out!" He stepped backward, craning his neck up, as strands of its web came floating down, striking the stone-flagged floor on either side of him like the bodies of meaty white snakes. They immediately began to lose shape, to flow into the cracks between the stones. The web was falling apart, coming loose from its many moorings. One of the bodies, wrapped up like a fly, came plunging down to strike the floor with a sickening, rotted gourd sound. "The spider!" Bill yelled. "Where is it?" He could still hear it in his head, mewling and crying out in its pain, and understood dimly that it had gone into the same tunnel it had thrown Bill into. But had it gone in there to flee back to the place where it had meant to send Bill, or to hide until they were gone? To die? Or escape? "Christ, the lights!" Richie shouted. "The lights are going out! What happened, Bill? Where did you go? We thought you were dead." In some confused part of his mind, Bill knew that wasn't true. If they had really thought him dead, they would have run, scattered, and it would have picked them off easily, one by one. Or perhaps it would be truer to say they had thought him dead, but believed him alive. "We have to make sure. If it's dying or gone back to where it came from, where the rest of it is, that's fine. But what if it's just hurt? What if it can get better? What?" Stan's shriek cut across his thoughts like broken glass. In the fading light, Bill saw that one of the strands of webbing had come down on Stan's shoulder. Before Bill could reach him, Mike had thrown himself at the smaller boy in a flying tackle. He drove Stan away, and the piece of webbing snapped back, taking a piece of Stan's polo shirt with it. "Get back!" Ben yelled at them. "Get away from it! It's all coming down!" He seized Beverly's hand and pulled her back toward the child-sized door while Stan struggled to his feet, looked dazedly around, and then grabbed Eddie. The two of them started toward Ben and Beverly, helping each other, looking like phantoms in the fading light. Overhead, the spider web was drooping, collapsing on itself, losing its fearful symmetry. Bodies twirled lazily in the air like nightmarish plumb bobs. Cross strands fell in like the rotted rungs of some strange complex of ladders. Severed strands hit the stone flagging, hissed like cats, lost their shape, began to run. Mike Hanlon wove his way through them as he would later weave his way through the opposing lines of nearly a dozen high school football teams, head down, ducking and dodging. Richie joined him. Incredibly, Richie was laughing, although his hair was standing straight up on his head like the quills of a porcupine. The light grew dimmer, the phosphorescence that had coiled on the walls now dying away. "Bill," Mike shouted, "come on, get the frock out of there." "What if it's not dead?" Bill screamed back. "We got to go after it, Mike. We got to make sure." A snarl of webbing sagged outward like a parachute and then fell with a nasty ripping sound that was like skin being pulled apart. Mike grabbed Bill's arm and pulled him, stumbling, out of the way. "It's dead," Eddie cried, joining them. His eyes were febrile lamps, his breathing a chilly winter whistle in his throat. Fallen strands of webbing had sizzled complex scars into the plaster of Paris of his cast. "I heard it. It was dying. You don't sound like that if you're on your way to a sock hop. It was dying, I'm sure of it." Richie's hands groped out of the darkness, seized Bill, and pulled him into a rough embrace. He began to pound Bill's back ecstatically. "I heard it too. It was dying, Big Bill. It was dying. And you're not stuttering. Not at all. How'd you do it? How in the hell?" Bill's brain was whirling. Exhaustion tugged at him with thick and clumsy hands. He could not remember ever feeling this tired. But in his mind, he heard the drawling, almost weary voice of the turtle.
"I'd finish it now. Don't let it get away. What can be done when you're 11 can often never be done again."
"But we have to be sure." The shadows were joining hands, and now the darkness was almost complete. But before the light failed utterly, he thought he saw the same hellish doubt on Beverly's face and in Stan's eyes. And still, as the last of the light gave way, they could hear the tenebrous whisper-shudder thump of its unspeakable web falling to pieces. 3. Bill in the Void. Late.
"Well, here you are again, little buddy. But what's happened to your hair? You're just as bald as a cue ball." "Sad. What sad short lives humans live. Each life a short pamphlet written by an idiot. Tut, tut, and all that. I'm still Bill Denbro. You killed my brother, and you killed Stan the Man. You tried to kill Mike. And I'm going to tell you something. This time, I'm not going to stop until the job's done." "The turtle was stupid, too stupid to lie. He told you the truth, little buddy. The time only comes around once. You hurt me. You surprised me. Never again. I am the one who called you back. I..."
"You called, all right, but you weren't the only one."
"Your friend, the turtle, he died a few years ago. The old idiot puked inside his shell and choked to death on a galaxy or two. Very sad, don't you think? But also quite bizarre. Deserves a place in Ripley's Believe It or Not. That's what I think. Happened right around the same time you had that writer's block. You must have felt him go, little buddy."
"I don't believe that either."
"Oh, you'll believe. You'll see. This time, little buddy, I intend you to see everything, including the deadlights."
He sensed its voice rising, buzzing, and racketing. At last he sensed the full extent of its fury, and he was terrified. He reached for the tongue of its mind, concentrating, trying desperately to recapture the full extent of that childish belief, understanding at the same time that there was a deadly truth in what it had said. Last time, it had been unprepared. This time, well, even if it had not been the only one to call them, it sure had been waiting.
But still,
he felt his own fury clean and singing as his eyes fixed on its eyes. He sensed its old scars, sensed that it had truly been hurt, and that it was still hurt. And as it threw him, as he felt his mind swatted out of his body, he concentrated all of his being on seizing its tongue and missed his grip. 4. Richie. The other four watched, paralyzed. It was an exact replay of what had happened before, at first. The spider, which seemed about to seize Bill and gobble him up, grew suddenly still. Bill's eyes locked with its ruby ones. There was a sense of contact, a contact just beyond their ability to divine. But they felt the struggle, the clash of wills. Then Richie glanced up into the new web and saw the first difference. There were bodies there, some half-eaten and half-rotted, and that was the same. But high up, in one corner, was another body. And Richie was sure this one was still fresh, possibly even still alive. Beverly had not looked up. Her eyes were fixed on Bill and the spider. But even in his terror, Richie saw the resemblance between Beverly and the woman in the web. Her hair was long and red. Her eyes were open, but glassy and unmoving. A line of spittle had run from the left corner of her mouth down to her chin. She had been attached to one of the web's main cables by a gossamer harness that went around her waist and under both arms, so that she lolled forward in a half bow, arms and legs dangling limply. Her feet were bare. Richie saw another body crumpled at the foot of her web, a man he had never seen before. And yet his mind registered an almost subconscious resemblance to the late unlamented Henry Bowers. Blood had run from both of the stranger's eyes and caked in a foam around his mouth and on his chin. Then Beverly was screaming, "Something's wrong! Something's gone wrong! Do something! For Christ's sake, won't somebody do something?" Richie's gaze snapped back to Bill and the spider, and he sensed, heard, monstrous laughter. Bill's face was stretching in some subtle way. His skin had gone parchment sallow, as shiny as the skin of a very old person. His eyes were rolled up to the whites.
Oh, Bill, where are you?
As Richie watched, blood suddenly burst from Bill's nose in a foam. His mouth was writhing, trying to scream, and now the spider was advancing on him again. It was turning, presenting its stinger.
It means to kill him. Kill his body, anyway, while his mind is somewhere else. It means to shut him out forever. It's winning. Bill, where are you? For Christ's sake, where are you?
And somewhere, faintly, from some unimaginable distance, he heard Bill scream. And the words, although meaningless, were crystal clear and full of sickening.
The turtle is dead. Oh, God, the turtle really is dead.
Despair. Bev shrieked again and put her hands to her ears as if to shut out that fading voice. The spider's stinger rose, and Richie bolted at it, a grin spreading up toward his ears, and he called out in his best Irish cop's voice,
"Here, here, me fine girl. Just what in the hell do you think you're doing? Belay that guff before I snatch your petty skirts and snap your smithy riddles."
The spider stopped laughing, and Richie felt a rising howl of anger and pain inside its head.
"Hurt it," he thought triumphantly. "Hurt it. How about that? Hurt it, and guess what? I've got its tongue. I think Bill missed it somehow, but while it was distracted, I got..."
Then screaming at him, its cries a hive of furious bees in his head, Richie was whacked out of himself and into darkness, dimly aware that it was trying to shake him loose. It was doing a pretty good job, too. Terror washed through him and then was replaced by a sense of cosmic absurdity. He remembered Beverly with his Duncan yo-yo, showing him how to make it sleep, walk the dog, go around the world. And now here he was, Richie, the human yo-yo, and its tongue was the string. Here he was, and this wasn't called walking the dog, but maybe walking the spider. And if that wasn't funny, what was? Richie laughed. It wasn't polite to laugh with your mouth full, of course, but he doubted if anybody out here read Miss Manners. That got him laughing again, and he bit in harder. The spider screamed and shook him furiously, howling its anger at being surprised again. It had believed only the writer would challenge it, and now this man who was laughing like a crazy boy had seized it when it was least prepared. Richie felt himself slipping.
"Hold it a second, Senorita. We is going out here together, or I ain't gonna sell you no tickets in La Loteria after all. And every one is a big winner, I swear in my mama's name."
He felt his teeth catch again, more firmly this time. And there was a fainting sort of pain as it drove its fangs into his own tongue. Boy, it was still pretty funny, though. Even in the dark, being hurled after Bill with only the tongue of this unspeakable monster left to connect him to his own world, even with the pain of its poisonous fangs suffusing his mind like a red fog, it was pretty goddamned funny.
"Check it out, folks. You'll believe a disc jockey can fly."
He was flying, all right.
Richie was in greater darkness than he had ever known, than he had ever suspected might exist, traveling at what felt like the speed of light and being shaken as a terrier shakes a rat. He sensed that there was something up ahead, some titanic corpse. The turtle he had heard Bill lamenting in his fading voice? Must be. It was only a shell, a dead husk. Then he was past, rushing on into the darkness.
"Really steaming now," he thought, and felt that wild urge to cackle again.
"Bill! Bill, can you hear me?"
"He's gone. He's in the deadlights. Let me go. Let me go."
"Richie."
Incredibly distant, incredibly far out in the black.
"Bill, Bill, here I am. Catch hold. For God's sake, catch hold."
"He's dead. You're all dead. You're too old. Don't you understand that? Now let me go."
"Hey, bitch, you're never too old to rock and roll."
"Let me go."
"Take me to him and maybe I will."
"Richie."
Closer. He was closer now, thank God.
"Here I come, Big Bill. Richie, to the rescue. Gonna save your old cracked ass. Owe you one from that day on Neibolt Street, remember?"
"Let me go."
It was hurting badly now, and Richie understood how completely he had caught it by surprise. It had believed it had only Bill to deal with. Well, good. Good enough. Richie didn't care about killing it right now. He was no longer sure it could be killed. But Bill could be killed, and Richie sensed that Bill's time was now very, very short. Bill was closing in on some large, nasty surprise out here, something best not thought about.
Richie, no, go back. It's the edge of everything up here, the deadlights.
Sounds like what you turn on when you're driving your hearse at midnight, Senhor.
And where is you, honey child? Smile so I can see where you is.
And suddenly Bill was there, skidding along on the left, right. There was no direction here, one side or the other. And beyond him, coming up fast, Richie could see, sense, something that finally dried up his laughter. It was a barrier, something of a strange, non-geometrical shape that his mind could not grasp. Instead, his mind translated it as best it could, as it had translated the shape of it into a spider, allowing Richie to think of it as a colossal gray wall made of fossilized wooden stakes. These stakes went forever up and forever down, like the bars of a cage, and from between them shone a great blind light. It glared and moved, smiled and snarled. The light was alive. Deadlights. More than alive, it was full of a force, magnetism, gravity, perhaps something else. Richie felt himself lifted and dropped, swirled and pulled, as if he were shooting a fast throat of rapids in an inner tube. He could feel the light moving eagerly over his face, and the light was thinking. This is it. This is it. The rest of it.
Let me go. You promised to let me go.
I know, but sometimes, honey child, I lie. My mama, she beat me for it, but my daddy, he done just about give up.
He sensed Bill tumbling and flailing toward one of the gaps in the wall, sensed evil fingers of light reaching for him, and with a final despairing effort, he reached for his friend.
Bill, your hand. Give me your hand. Your hand, goddammit, your hand.
Bill's hand shot out, the fingers opening and closing, that living fire crawling and twisting over Audra's wedding ring in runic Moorish patterns. Wheels, crescents, stars, swastikas, linked circles that grew into rolling chains. Bill's face was overlaid with the same light, making him look tattooed. Richie stretched out as far as he could, hearing it scream and yammer.
I missed him. Oh, dear God, I missed him. He's going to shoot through.
Then Bill's fingers closed over Richie's, and Richie clenched his hand into a fist. Bill's legs flew through one of the gaps in the frozen wood, and for one mad moment, Richie realized he could see all the bones and veins and capillaries inside them, as if Bill had shot halfway into the maw of the world's strongest X-ray machine. Richie felt the muscles in his arms stretch like taffy, felt the ball and socket joint in his shoulder creak and groan in protest as the foot-pounds of pressure built up. He summoned all of his force and shouted, "Pull us back! Pull us back or I'll kill you! I'll voice you to death!" The spider screeched again, and Richie suddenly felt a great snapping whiplash curl through his body. His arm was a white-hot bar of agony. His grip on Bill's hand began to slip.
"Hold on, Big Bill! I got you! Richie, I got you!"
"You better," Richie thought grimly, "because I think you could walk 10 billion miles out here and never find a fucking pay toilet." They whistled back, that crazy light fading, becoming a series of brilliant pinpoints that finally winked out. They drove through the darkness like torpedoes, Richie gripping its tongue with his teeth and Bill's wrist with one aching hand. There was the turtle, there and gone in a single eye blink. Richie sensed them drawing closer to whatever passed for the real world, although he believed he would never think of it as exactly real again. He would see it as a clever canvas scene underlaid with a crisscrossing of support cables, cables like the strands of a spider web.